Welcome to this podcast, Using Social Media in Surgical Education. And this is a follow-up of the discussion that we had at the recent virtual Grand Rounds. I'm Dr. Mark Ader, co-chair of the American College of Surgeons Accredited Educational Institute's Education Resource Dissemination Committee. Joining me today on today's podcast are participants in our recent virtual Grand Rounds on social media, Dr. Sean Langenfeld from the University of Nebraska and Julie Hartman from the University of Iowa. If you haven't had the opportunity yet to view that virtual Grand Rounds, it's really something that will provide a lot of additional background information. And today we hope to kind of follow up on some of the questions and some of the points that were raised. So I just want to start off by saying, when you build a home, when you first have to get ready to build your house, you have to obtain a land survey, you have to do soil samples, you have to get a structural engineer, even before the architect can begin their first drawings or anything like that. What do you feel are the real foundation aspects that are necessary before you can even say, hey, I want to even go to this social platform or this social media device? So what do you really need to have in place there?
You know, I think that's a great analogy because I really do feel like we started with nothing and really had to think about what we wanted to do and what image we wanted to give of ourselves and of our center and how we wanted to be perceived. And I think the most important thing we did as a team was sit down and figure out what is that message that we want to send, and then what's the best venue on social media to use to get that message out. So that's where we're starting from. And still very much in the infancy of making full strides, I would say, in social media. But we needed to figure out who we wanted to be before we could start.
Yeah, I can only agree. I think it's smart to have a target audience in mind when you start putting things out there, because there's a lot of unintended members in the audience that you don't anticipate if you're not researching. So I think structurally, the first thing I would do is start to read about social media policies. You know, what the thing I said in my talk is real is that you're employed and your employer has a social media policy that are guidelines that nobody's ever read most of the time. And if you start from there, you only can get into trouble with missteps and so forth. And then the other thing is that you got to have a team. If you're talking about accounts for an institution or a program, then you have to have a team. You can't rely upon one person because we're very busy. A lot of us have a lot of balls in the air, if that makes sense. And you can have an initial high level of enthusiasm and then it's not sustained. And that's what a lot of these dead institutional accounts come from. And in our instance here at the Med Center, we got the residents involved, specifically the residents that are in the lab. And they had a lot more sort of energy and time to give. So that's what I think.
When you talk about the team and you talk about putting together everyone, do you have people who on a team enforce the governance and others that will take a look at accountability or start to go through content? I mean, how do you kind of direct that? I mean, it sounds like you have to have a number of people involved.
I think it's good to have one or two people with an actual pointed title. We have like a social media coordinator, essentially, as a role within the residency. I have to be kind of careful about policing content and things like that, because it loses its authenticity when it's clearly this regimented thing that the program's telling you to do. And I think that the casual nature of some of these social media posts are very important. It's not published, but I was reviewing some, manuscript recently where they pointed out pretty clearly that what the applicants to a program get from it is different than what we think we're giving them. And very specifically, they're using social media not to just decide your prestige or your ability to make them graduate on time and before certified. they're looking at resident camaraderie, the culture of a program. And when you try to force culture, force artificial camaraderie, students are pretty smart and they can kind of sniff that out.
I realize I'm sitting here nodding along with you, Sean, and it's a podcast. People can't hear me nodding. But yes, I think that's a really good point to bring up too, that it's a lot of, you know, what is the perception of your center and who is going to be doing that perceiving? Is it other centers? Is it other medical institutions? Is it potential applicants to your program? I think that's a really good point to bring up. And I think also one of the things that we have done is we made like our own policy on social media for our center, because who doesn't love a whole bunch of policies and procedures? But we felt it was really important that our whole team was on the same page with what should and should not be posted. And so overall, we decided that we were going to have any posts for social media be reviewed by one other member of our team. So we all know what we are looking for, and we'll create a post that we think meets those guidelines, but agreed that everybody needs an editor, and it's great to have an extra set of eyes look things over before it becomes part of like your permanent online record, so to speak. So we felt that was really important to have at least one other person look over our post before we put it out there into the world.
He's called that measure twice, post once, is I think what I said.
About exactly
3 years ago or something. But, I don't even, the thing about social media is the accuracy is not necessary. So you could do everything in your power to have a well-governed and appropriate account. But then somebody else from your department or from your program, depending on where you're at, can use their personal account to misbehave. And that's probably more common. And if they say something horrible, if I say something horrible online, it's not going to say Sean Langenfeld said this. It's going to say University of Nebraska Medical Center surgeon said this, you know. And so the programs can be collateral damage. So I think the way that I have battled that in the past is when I was in the program director's office is instituting a curriculum. You know what I mean? Making sure it was clear to people this is something that they have to learn about, and putting that in grand rounds or in, you know, their kind of didactics to improve their understanding and keep them out of trouble to the best of your ability.
So do you have different criteria for what's the educational material and what is some of the social environment that people can see?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, you know, there's somewhere we want to do some learning, some instruction, some things that we posted up there for the residents to take, to try to learn from. And then there are other things where we start to talk about, you know, there's a little bit of our social interaction within the department, and this is how the residents are with each other and things like that. I always kind of look at it as kind of a double edge. We could be talking now about content, but yet we could also be chatting too about some other aspect of maybe the upcoming meetings or something like that. So how do you differentiate that? Do you have a different standard for each one?
That's very difficult to do. So one of the big things that I talked about with social media is the blurred lines and, overlap between your personal life, your professional life. Somebody goes on Facebook, they post a funny video, they like a picture of their niece, and then they discuss the pros and cons of the recent randomized controlled trial, you know, and so it's just, that's the nature of the beast. If people can try very hard to separate these things, it's very difficult to do. So instead, I think that it's just best that you accept the marriage as it is and try to keep it light in both directions.
I think that's comforting to hear, because honestly, that's one of my big anxieties, is I really want to help make those things separate. But to your point, Sean, still make it seem like we're real people who are really participating in these activities, and we're not just somebody taking stock photos to be able to post. We really do use our spaces. We really do engage in these things. And, you know, we had an instance where we have, everybody has a phone and every phone can take a picture. And there's so much that we rely on now with picture records of things that we don't even bother writing things down. And I had one of our surgeons talk about patient positioning. And it was for a procedure that wasn't done very often and had a very specific setup that took a bit of time, and told the resident, take a picture of this so that we can make sure that you know how to do this the next time. And there's no mention ever in the conversation of posting that on social media, but immediately my mind went to, oh my goodness, would that be something acceptable? Because I could see both sides of it. Yes, it's very educational because it shows a specific thing and it's a great reference tool. But would that be something that I would feel comfortable with someone sharing online? And so I think that's a really, you know, a tricky thing that I still struggle with being new in this.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I would say that patient privacy comes first. You should never post anything like that without consent. The patient's visible, especially when it's uncommon, an uncommon thing. It's easier to identify the patient. It's very easy to violate HIPAA without actually saying somebody's name, if that makes sense. And that's a big problem online. A lot of doctors. Now, whether they're doing it for education or for shock value, or it's hard to know, or for advocacy, but they'll post a picture of a bloody trauma bay. Yes. As a way of talking about gun violence, and it takes me about 3 seconds on Google to figure out who the patient was because they're posting it with date and timestamp, and so that's a real problem, and I'm very fiercely against doing that. I also am very fiercely supportive of patient consented information. So like if somebody says, hey, I'm going to post this video of your surgery online, there's a lot to be learned from that. And so it's just something you have to be very careful with, and always remember the patient's your number one. And with that, you stay out of trouble most of the time.
You know, it's interesting listening to both of you speak, and some of the social media that we see out there, even in our own surgical communities, where people will post cases, and you know what city they're in, or you know what their locale is. And they're spread all across the country. Some of them may be in major cities, but many of them are not. And what they'll say, well, I have this 36-year-old woman who has, and they go through a number of social situations, and then they talk about a medical problem. And that, to me, is really difficult. I mean, I don't know that I would ever think about posting that as one of my patients. They're asking for advice as how you would handle this case, but I don't know if that patient has signed off the appropriate waivers to say, post my case online. It's just like the case report we used to do years ago. We say, write up the case report, but you'd always have to get permission and it would always have to be approved. So how is this different, or is it not different, or is what we're doing online, even asking these sorts of questions, not really the way to go?
I'm going to give that all to you, Sean, because I have the same question. And to add to Mark's comment, I feel like there's kind of some social media peer pressure, because you see so many groups doing things like that. It seems like if you don't, are you just not good enough? Do you not have interesting cases to share? Like it feels like we're obligated to share things like that.
One of the greatest powers, one of the best uses of social media, is the creation of a virtual surgeon's lounge. Not everybody has a senior partner they can go to for help. And if you reach out to a network of experts, it instantly at your fingertips get feedback on what you should do for something. It's a great tool. and certainly probably improves care in some situations. At the same time, though, these closed Facebook groups, or especially Twitter, this is not like a HIPAA-compliant area to discuss cases, especially if you're starting to discuss specifics. You can get in a lot of trouble with HIPAA. Additionally, is that a sophisticated way to make a clinical decision? You know, five strangers from the internet said do this and you're going to do it. You know what I mean? And so it's a very shaky balance. Some of the newer platforms that are coming out that haven't come out yet are trying their best to make a network for this clinical discussion that's similar to M&M, so that it's not discoverable, if that makes sense. But in the meantime, these bigger social media closed groups have been subpoenaed for content in malpractice lawsuits. It's 100% happened. And so you got to be real careful what you share. I think that if you're going to discuss a clinical case with details, you have to get patient permission before you do it.
I think that goes back to what are your policies from the institution that you're from. I mean, anything that you post online, even if you're asking the question on what would you do or what you did do, and somebody says, well, I would have done something different, and somebody else says, well, I agree with the person who would have done something different. And if that's discoverable, I mean, now you're getting into that gray area. Where you're going to really put yourself or your institution at risk. When we have an M&M conference, I can tell you at our institution, you know, I preface it by saying it's purely for educational purposes, that there's protected healthcare information that's going to be discussed and should not be discussed outside the confines of this conference. And so it's a limited attendance. When you post it up on social media, not a limited attendance, and anybody can repost that. So those, you know, I guess that is, you know, the difficult thing that you bring up, Julie, you know, when they start even posting positions for, you know, for surgical procedures, you know, what kind of consents do we have to get? What kind of waivers have to be signed? I mean, do you have people sign waivers for doing this?
So I know that we have patients sign waivers for videotaped procedures that are done. I don't know what is being collected as far as consent for other things. I think that's a great point. And again, just to clarify, in this situation, you know, I wasn't aware that anything even was posted, but it just triggered in my mind, they took a picture and it could be posted.
You can get fired for that. I mean, you can't take pictures with a personal camera in the OR, period. You know what I mean? That's just super dangerous. I do think that there's a lot to be gained from this very important rare positioning or whatever, but that's just a recipe for disaster. Now, the surgeon is asking somebody else to take the pictures. He's incriminating a second person, all with benign intent, but it comes from a lack of understanding. And it's a big problem. So, you know, you have not only that, but let's say you do something and it's okay right now. Things move. It's a moving target. The standard of care is a moving target. 10 years from now, it could be wrong. People get in trouble for bad online behavior happened 10 years ago all the time in social media. And then you're talking about getting expert, advice over the internet. What makes him an expert? The fact that he posts the coolest YouTube videos? You know what I mean? So it's like these guys' expertise is not guaranteed. I mean, the content's not peer-reviewed. So be really careful about stuff you learn about online from strangers. That being said, still a wonderful tool for clinical discussion. And so it's just a balance. And it's hard to balance.
And as we come to wrap up, Julie, any final comments?
I don't know that I have a lot of great expertise at this point in time to share, but I'm really hopeful that, you know, our team is going to be able to utilize this tool and be able to share some good content that people will find value in. but also share in an appropriate way. And I think it's been a really great experience being able to talk with Sean, talking with Ed in the virtual grand rounds, and really getting some more concrete examples and ideas of things that will help us with our best practices. So I really appreciate being able to be part of this group, and I'm excited to see how we're able to grow and avoid being in trouble with the social media police to make sure we're posting good things out there.
Sean, I know you've written quite a bit on this certainly have a degree of expertise. I'm going to ask you if you'd be willing to share some of your papers so that we can post them along with the VGR and the podcast for people to be able to reference some of these good works.
Yeah, happy to share whatever I got.
Okay. Any other comments, Sean, before we wrap up? Any other final take home?
I just think the social media is a big, powerful beast that's difficult to control, but it's ubiquitous. And all the residents are on there, and all of your patients are on there. And so you got to get in the game if you want to remain relevant, because education is going to move to that platform no matter with you or without you. But because there's so many pitfalls, you have to be smart and deliberate and not entirely lighthearted in the way that you conduct yourself online. And I think that it's important to understand who sees what and the consequences to keep you out of trouble. But now even though I always talk about doom and gloom, I'm a huge social media enthusiast. I cannot stop going on social media, but you just got to be careful.
Hey, well, thank you. And really thanks to our podcast participants, Julie Hartman and Sean Langenfeld. It's just really enlightening just to kind of hear the reflections and the experiences of our colleagues who have engaged with social media and the challenges that they have had or really seek to avoid. So just to remind everybody, the original VGR virtual grand rounds and this podcast are going to be available on the website, as well as some of Dr. Langenfeld's articles. So right now, on behalf of the dissemination committee and my co-chair, Olivier Patino, I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank the American College of Surgeons for sponsoring or helping sponsor the virtual Grand Round series, the podcast, and all their fine work for the Accredited Educational Institutes Consortium. This is Mark Ader, just wishing you all a good day. Thank you.